So please welcome Tim Crowley.
By the fall of 1986, Susie and I had been married for over 2 years. I had less than a year left in the Coast Guard, and we were expecting our first baby in November. Life was good, we were young, and we were getting ready. We were painting the baby's room. It was a hot August day, one of the hot fall day, one of the best times of year in Morro Bay, and I had all the doors and windows open in that small, funky white cottage that we were renting, and I had our radio blasting. We were listening to K-Otter, a small independent radio station that used to broadcast out of Cambria, a station for used-to-be hippies and wannabe hippies, and my radio was stuck there. And I was busy rocking out and painting that room when all of a sudden, right in the middle of a song, the radio went dead. I could pick up other stations as I tuned up in the up and down the dial, but K-Otter was off the air. But as I tuned around, I came across this voice telling a story, and the character was going through some kind of crisis, and he was thinking about California and about mountains rising in the distance, and that got me hooked because I have always had this thing about distant mountains. When I was thumbing around the country, sometimes I'd spy a particularly mysterious group of blue distant peaks rising above miles and miles of desolate flat mountain, flat desert terrain, and I'd have my ride stop and drop me off in the middle of nowhere, and I'd trek across the desert to those blue distant hills, and they were always further away than they looked in that dry desert air, and they, when I finally reached them, they were never blue. And that story's setting changed from the midlife musings of that man to some strange town out on the edge of the twilight zone, a place where the mundane and the insane existed together side by side, just like real life. And I was old enough to understand what that narrator was talking about, but young enough to wonder what the hell he was talking about. But I knew he was talking to me when that story ended, because my wife is strong, I'm good looking, and I knew that my child would be above average. And when the story ended, I walked outside and I looked up towards the blue, distant blue Santa Lucia Hills rising in, against that autumn sky and stretching north all the way to Big Sur and beyond. And I started listening to a Prairie Home Companion after that. And the years passed by, and I had another kid. And those stories somehow seemed to become more and more relevant. And my radio dial slowly drifted left to our local radio station, our public radio station, KCBX. And eventually, it got stuck there. Not because I was getting older, but because now I had two kids and I needed to know what was happening in our nation, our world, and in Lake Wobegon. The Italian film director Federico Fellini said that life is a combination of pasta and magic. And that really resonated with me the first time that I read it on a shopping bag in Trader Joe's. Because I knew what he was talking about. He meant that the well-balanced life combines the practical and the magical, the mysterious, and life is full of mystery. Those mysteries and coincidences and those seemingly random choices we make over the years all seem to weave together into the pattern of our life. And those coincidences happen all the time, especially if you're like me and you're looking for them. And some of them seem insignificant and small, like listening to a radio station when it happens to go off the air. And some of them are so big and obvious, you know they gotta mean something. Like 3 weeks ago today, 3 months ago today, I was volunteering in the library at San Luis Obispo. And even though I'm 57 years old, I am one of the younger volunteers, which automatically qualifies me as a Morro Bay library muscle man. And I was there in the book sale room stacking boxes of books higher than my head when this book fell out of a box or out of the sky or out of somewhere and it struck me on the left shoulder. Fortunately, it was a paperback. Leaf by Niggle by J.R.R. Tolkien. And I had been looking for that book for over a year. There's copies on the internet, but they are all hardcover and outrageously expensive. They have a copy in the library, but I wanted to underline in that book and write comments in that book because out of this great essay by Tolkien about writing stories, I wanted to own that book, but I couldn't find an affordable copy anywhere, so one found me. And it was on a Wednesday that this happened, and a few hours later, it was Slolio. So I drove here, and me and Susie are driving down Santa Rosa. I turned right onto Peach Street, pulled over to park, and bam! My right front tire exploded. I sat there stunned, unsure of what happened, and unwilling to believe Susie when she said, "You ran into the curb." So I got outside, and I checked it out, and I ran into the curb. And I was inspecting my ruined tire when another car turned right off of Santa Rosa, pulled over to park not 100 feet away, and bam, they ran into the curb and blew their tire. There was less than a half hour to Slolio, but I wasn't really worried because I am a runner, which isn't really a superpower, but it's kind of a mediocre power. So I sent Susie ahead to reserve us a couple seats. I went into Indy pit crew mode, changed that tire, and then I ran over to that car, told them about the incredible coincidence we had just shared, ran away, and got here with enough time left over to get an orange cream. And I'd like to think that that library coincidence bodes well for my future literary life. As for the parking coincidence, it might turn out to mean something over the years, but I think it is just another item on the long list of stupid things I have done in front of my wife over the years. And it's a pretty long list because we have been married a pretty long time. On July 1st, we celebrated our 32nd anniversary. And I wanted to do something to celebrate. So I looked around for plays or concerts, something far enough away so we could make a weekend out of it. And I found out that Garrison Keillor would be down at the Hollywood Bowl on our anniversary. And it was going to be the last time he'd be doing a Prairie Home Companion. And I thought, what a coincidence. So we went down, I got tickets, booked ourselves a room in a nice B&B in Pasadena, right near a shuttle that'd take us right to the Hollywood Bowl. And when we got off of that shuttle, I was disoriented because the Hollywood Bowl was facing the wrong way. I hadn't been there in over 35 years, and that was with my bookstore girlfriend, an exotic older woman who said she was 29, but I think she was older. And I didn't remember shuttles or parking hassles or crowds, but I do remember the picnics and that I paid for the tickets and she brought the food and the wine. And we found a picnic spot and she handed me wine and a corkscrew and I had never used one before. But fortunately, I was a bridge carpenter for the Southern Pacific Railroad and I figured it out on the fly. I opened up that wine bottle with all the finesse and skill of a bridge carpenter. And I think she knew it was my first time. Susie and I brought a picnic too. In fact, I think everybody brought a picnic because I have never seen so many Trader Joe bags in my life. Not even at Trader Joe's. And we found the highest picnic spot. We had an overview of Hollywood and downtown LA, and I could see the Hollywood Freeway winding right in back of the Hollywood Bowl, the same freeway that winds right in back of the house I grew up at, 8 miles to the north in North Hollywood, the unsexy end of the Hollywood Freeway. And the crowds kept growing, more crowded in that picnic ground, and we finished our sushi and our fine Pinot Grigio that had a screw cap, even though I know how to use a corkscrew by now. And we got another half liter of wine, walked down, found our seats, and we watched the Hollywood Bowl fill up to the brim. And the crowd wasn't as lily white as I thought it would be. It was kind of diverse in a Republican convention kind of way. And the show started, and it was poignant and sad and happy, and they had a lot of singing, and it got dark, and Garrison Keillor started his monologue, and the whole place was just rapt, and I leaned forward, and after a while, I noticed that my mouth was gaping open, maybe because of the wine, but I don't think so. I looked around, and a lot of people had expression. 18,000 people focused on the words of one master storyteller. And I didn't see one glowing cell phone screen in all that mass of humanity. But there were two searchlight beams piercing the brilliant dark sky overhead, and they crossed in a big X right above me, marking that spot for all the world to see, and there wasn't anywhere else that I'd rather be. Thank you.